Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, March 6, 2020 edition of the News Gazette. And we'll begin on the front page with a piece saying number 19, Ohio State 71, number 23, Illinois 63. Help wanted. Illini can still grab title share, but it's going to take some work. By Scott Ritchie, Columbus, Ohio. Illinois still has a shot at a share of the Big Ten regular season title. The odds just got quite a bit longer after Thursday night's 71-63 loss at number 19 Ohio State. The Illini no longer control their own destiny. Losing to the Buckeyes has number 23 Illinois, 2010-12-7 Big Ten, in fourth place in the Big Ten standings behind the three-way tie for first occupied by Maryland, Michigan State, and Wisconsin. All three teams have to lose this weekend, and Illinois has to win Sunday's 6 p.m. regular season finale against number 18 Iowa for the Illini to claim their share of the conference title. Illinois last won a Big Ten title in 2005. Wisconsin plays at Indiana on Saturday. Michigan State will have played Ohio State, and Maryland will have played Michigan by the time the Illini tip off against the Hawkeyes at State Farm Center. A share of the Big Ten title, though, isn't all Illinois has to play for Sunday. A win against Iowa would assure the Illini a top-four finish in the conference and a double bye for a Friday start in the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis. "We've got a bye to play for," Illinois coach Brad Underwood said. "We've been a top-25 team as we head to the conference tournament. It's the end of the regular season, and it's what this league is about. You show up, you compete, and it's on to the next." And next, we have a verdict in D'Angelis Chambers' murder trial, guilty. Urbana man facing up to 85-year term. By Mary Shank, Urbana. An Urbana man who claimed he acted in self-defense when he shot an angry man outside his girlfriend's apartment more than a year ago faces 45 to 85 years in prison when he is sentenced next month. A Champaign County jury of 8 men and 4 women deliberated just under 2 hours Thursday before finding D'Angelis Chambers, 29, guilty of first-degree murder in the December 30, 2018, fatal shooting of Renice Riley, 30. "I heard Renice outside yelling, 'Bring your expletive outside,'" Chambers said while testifying as the last witness in his jury trial, which started Monday before Judge Roger Weber. "I went downstairs. I wanted to go home. I stood there by the gate waiting to see what was going to happen. He was saying, 'Come out here.' I didn't feel like it was the best thing for me to go back to the apartment," Chambers told the jury. Previous testimony came from Chambers' girlfriend, Demisha Carlton, and her sister, Danica Carlton, who was dating Mr. Riley. The sisters rented the apartment at 2008 Vauder Street, Urbana, in front of which the shooting happened. Both testified about ongoing tension between them because Demisha Carlton resented Mr. Riley's frequent presence, given that he contributed almost nothing to the rent. Demisha Carlton told the jury that she had told Mr. Riley on December 29th that he was not welcome and needed to leave before she got home from work that night. When she arrived home late December 29th and found Mr. Riley's sister there with her sister, she became upset. That prompted Chambers to go to Danica Carlton's room to speak to her. That discussion grew to a loud exchange that caused a neighbor a floor above who heard it to call police about 1:45 a.m., December 30th. An officer came, made sure no one was hurt, and left. About 45 minutes later, police were called back to find Mr. Riley face down in a pool of blood after having been shot in the chest in the front yard of the apartment building. Under him, an officer found a small .22 caliber revolver. Danica Carlton was with him. Her sister, Demetia, and Chambers had left in Chambers' sports utility vehicle. Demetia Carlton testified that she and Chambers had planned to leave the apartment even before Mr. Riley showed up, so as to escape the stress brought on by the frequent arguments with her sister. Danica Carlton said she had called Mr. Riley asking him to pick her and their child up and take them elsewhere for the night. All agreed that when Mr. Riley arrived, he was yelling from the yard for Chambers to come out of the apartment. He was taunting me with a firearm. Under questioning by one of his attorneys, public defender Janie Miller Jones, Chambers said he was inside the locked gate to the apartment building as Mr. Riley was out in the yard yelling obscenities. "I'll catch your expletive in the street," Chambers said, Mr. Riley threatened. "That's when I decided to go out the gate." When he said that, he brandished a firearm. He was taunting me with a firearm. Mr. Riley had removed his coat and sweatshirt, prepared to fight, Danica Carlton said. Chambers said when he saw the gun, he opened the gate to go through it, hitting Mr. Riley in the face with it and causing him to drop the gun. "He threw the first punch," Chambers asserted, adding he could not give a blow-by-blow account of how it progressed because it all happened so quickly. "I picked it up," he said of the gun, "because why wouldn't I? He had a gun in his hand. He probably would have shot me." Chambers said both he and Mr. Riley began throwing punches with fists and that he had the gun in his hand as he did so. "I started to lose the fight and I got scared," he said. "In order to keep him from knocking me out and getting the gun back, I shot him. After I shot, I walked over there and threw the gun down. I didn't want to take it with me. I got in my car and left." On cross-examination by Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson, Chambers said the small gun belonged to Danica Carlton, who had once demonstrated that the hammer had to be pulled back before the trigger could be squeezed to fire it. Chambers denied that he had ever touched the gun before, but said it was not that difficult to fire. He denied that the ammunition in it was his or that a .22 caliber rifle that police found in the closet of the bedroom he shared with Demetia Carlton was his, either. He also denied that a magazine for that rifle, filled with a .22 caliber rounds that was found in his parents' garage, was his. "It wasn't mine. My fingerprints and DNA were not on it," he said, offering no explanation for who the magazine in the garage or the rifle in the closet might have belonged to. Ridiculous and self-serving. In closing arguments to the jury, Larson called Chambers' testimony ridiculous and self-serving. He urged the jurors to recall what Demetia Carlton said Chambers told her as they headed down the apartment stairs just prior to confronting Mr. Riley. "Everything is going to be fine." Larson argued that was because Chambers had the gun in his pocket. He said the statements of the sisters and two other eyewitnesses who watched the confrontation from upstairs windows all fit the physical evidence. "It was a fair fight, a consensual fight between two adult men, up to the point that D'Angelis Chambers pulled out that gun. He even admitted he was starting to lose, and he had a plan B, and he used it," Larson said. Miller Jones argued that Mr. Riley had a history of violent tendencies, of which Chambers was aware from having seen them. "We can't armchair quarterback what happened that day," she argued. "All the witnesses said this fight happened quickly. You've got to consider the threats that were made, how angry and hostile Renice was when he came over." "Chambers did have the right to defend himself, to protect himself," she said. "Renice was not going to stop. D'Angelis feared for his life." The jury also convicted Chambers of unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. He had a previous conviction for felony theft in 2017 in another county. Because jurors found that Chambers personally fired the gun that killed Mr. Riley, he faces an additional 25 years in prison on top of the normal range of penalties of 20 to 60 years. Weber sentencing for April 17th. And next, a piece from Thomas Paine Elementary School. Incident involving staff member. Student triggers parent notification. By Ben Zigerman Urbana. Thomas Paine Elementary notified parents about an incident Wednesday involving a staff member and a student. The details weren't immediately clear, but the letter from Principal Dolores Lloyd said the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services was contacted regarding the manner in which a staff member responded to a student. Unfortunately, several students witnessed the incident as it occurred during arrival, where the students wait to be dismissed to the classroom prior to the teacher's contractual day beginning, Lloyd wrote. She said students who witnessed the incident have been interviewed by herself and other employees. Please be advised the appropriate actions are being taken as your children's safety and emotional well-being is our first priority, Lloyd wrote. It's not clear who contacted DCFS. The agency did not immediately return a request for comment, nor did Lloyd of the Urbana School District. In the fall, Lloyd was placed on leave and parents were notified about an issue of student safety at Thomas Paine after a staff member allegedly made inappropriate physical contact with a student on the playground during recess. While police concluded a crime did not occur in that incident, a DCFS spokesman noted at the time that it was still investigating whether its criteria for abuse and neglect has been met. And now we'll turn to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called What's on Public's Mind? Accurate public opinion polls are mere snapshots in time that are subject to change in a heartbeat. Nonetheless, they are useful guides to what the general public is thinking. Illinois voters are tired of corruption, frustrated with entrenched power, and want to bail out their financially beleaguered state by imposing higher taxes on upper-income earners. Those are among the conclusions of a recent statewide poll of 1,000 registered voters that was conducted by the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. Voters will address the tax question in the November election, but issues related to corruption and entrenched power will be left to reluctant but nervous legislators to confront. The poll, which was conducted February 10th through 17th, provides some good news to Governor J.B. Pritzker, who is backing an amendment to the Illinois Constitution that would allow for a progressive income tax. The provision would abolish the Constitution's flat tax mandate, replacing it with a general provision that would allow the governor and legislators to set a variety of rates on rising levels of income. Desperate for more revenue, Pritzker has characterized the amendment as the solution to the state's dire financial problems. The Simon poll, which has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.1%, revealed that 65% of respondents either strongly or somewhat favor the Pritzker tax hike plan. Just 37% either strongly or somewhat oppose it. The supermajority should please Pritzker because the measure requires a supermajority of at least 60% approval to become law. Still, it's a long way to November, with plenty of time for proponents and opponents to drive those numbers up or down. The fight will be fierce. Pritzker has pledged to use his multi-billion dollar personal fortune to fund the pro-tax hike campaign, while business interests have organized a coalition to fight it. One argument used by proponents of the amendment concerns the wisdom of letting voters decide the issue. However, legislators, at least those who control the Illinois House and Senate, adamantly oppose and are blocking another proposal that has strong public support and would abolish legislative gerrymandering. The poll revealed 67% of respondents favor changing redistricting rules to strip the majority party of the power to draw legislative district lines in ways that give it a political advantage. Just 22% opposed it. but the poll numbers, which are consistent with past public opinion polling, are meaningless in the face of opposition from Democratic legislative leaders, including House Speaker Michael Madigan, and at best lukewarm support from Pritzker. The poll showed widespread public corruption in Illinois is taking its toll on voters. It revealed they favor restrictions on legislators who wish to become lobbyists. Pritzker is backing that measure, but legislators are reluctant to take steps that would restrict their ability to capitalize on their legislative experience by becoming lobbyists. Another measure that isn't going anywhere involves changing the Illinois Constitution to limit future increases in public pensions. A bare majority, 51%, favors amending the state constitution to do so. That's not nearly enough to pass an amendment, even in the unlikely event that legislators would agree to put the issue to a vote. The bottom line of the poll shows the natives continue to be restless, while lacking much of an opportunity to do more than express their restlessness in an occasional public opinion poll. And we'll look now at the From Our Readers section and begin with a piece written by Philip Fisella, called Property Taxes Drive Up Costs. Deborah Pressey's February 26 article on housing affordability was insightful, but she neglected to mention one of the most substantial contributors to unaffordable housing in Champaign County. The real estate taxes billed to a landlord of her hypothetical two-bedroom, no-frills apartment are likely in the neighborhood of $2,500 per year, or nearly a third of the annual rental payments. Local taxing districts must be cognizant of this when setting tax levies. That again was written by Philip Fisella of Champaign. The next piece is written by Bill Denny of Urbana, called Curse of Death is Open to Cure. I want to address the real problem of humanity, which is the curse of death. 1. There are trillions of cells in the human body. Every time a cell replicates, three mutations are introduced into the cell. The accumulation of these bad mutations is always fatal. 2. The human race is dying. This is called genetic entropy. Every time a baby is born, a minimum of 60 to 100 bad mutations are passed to the newborn from the parents. There is continuing degradation in the DNA, as it is like making a copy of a copy of a copy, etc. These mutations are small at first, but at some time in the future would have a cascading effect. 3. At some future date, all life on this planet would cease to exist forever without God. 4. Many atheist, biologist, evolutionists know this, but it goes completely against their religious beliefs. 5. If humanity has been around as long as the atheists say, we should have been dead 100 times over. Without our Creator, nothing we do matters or will be remembered because we are heading towards extinction. In John 11:25-26, Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he dies, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes me in me shall never die. And that again was written by Bill Denny of Urbana. The next piece is written by Keith Walcott of Charleston, called Medicare for All Will Be Wonderful. With Medicare for all doctors, dentists, optometrists, hospitals, and clinics are in-network. No more long phone calls with insurance companies trying to sort out what is covered and where. You can take care of your health instead of your health insurance. And we'll look now at some area updates. State Farm Center Icons makes debut. Champaign. Now on display at the basketball home of the Illini, State Farm Center Icons, an art exhibit by Danville's John Jansky. Located just inside the main west entrance of the building, the exhibit shows 10 sports and entertainment stars who performed over the years at the arena formerly known as the Assembly Hall. Five are musicians: Garth Brooks, Elton John, Dolly Parton, Elvis Presley, and Prince. Five are Illini basketball legends: Ashley Bergren, Dee Brown, Kendall Gill, Lou Henson, and Darren Williams. Said Jansky, many of the musicians that have performed at the State Farm Center were the soundtrack to my life and influenced me to want to be an entertainer. It makes sense to display Jansky art paintings in the very venue that created the memories and emotion that inspired me to become a live art entertainer rather than a traditional art gallery. To have my art on display in such an iconic location is beyond what I had ever imagined. I hope that my art adds to the exciting and creative atmosphere of the State Farm Center, as well as inspires someone else to live their dreams. And that was from the News Gazette. The next piece is from the Virginia Theater. Hereditary joins Ebertfest. Champagne. A third film has been added to the lineup of next month's 22nd annual Ebertfest at the Virginia Theater. Ari Aster's 2018 horror flick, Hereditary, described in critic Matt Zollersite's 4-star review as creepy beyond belief, will be shown during the festival set for April 15th through 18th. Actor Alex Wolff, who plays the eldest son in the grieving family at the center of Hereditary, will be among the festival guests. The big winner at the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards and Freight Meter Awards will join a roster that also includes Francis Ford Coppola's The Cotton Club Encore, a remastered and restored version of the 1984 original, and the Farrell Brothers' There's Something About Mary. Also to be shown, an Alfred Hitchcock movie, TBD, by popular demand of Ebertfest fans who were surveyed. Festival co-founder Chaz Ebert told the News Gazette last month that The Birds and Vertigo were the two Hitchcock films in the running. The rest of the 12-film lineup will be revealed in the coming weeks. Individual movie tickets will go on sale on April 1st. All festival passes are available now for $150 per person plus processing, or $510 for four purchased together. The next piece is from the University of Illinois, Spring Break Trips Canceled, Urbana. The coronavirus outbreak has led to another round of cancellations of UI-related activities. On Thursday, UI officials announced they were calling off all school-sponsored spring break trips outside the U.S., as well as school-sponsored trips within the U.S. that require air travel. Domestic trips that use ground travel can go on if a UI dean or vice chancellor approves them. The UI noted that registered student organizations are independent groups and are not subject to the new rules. A group's advisor would have input on whether a trip should be canceled. Spring break on campus is the week of March 16th. Earlier this week, the UI ordered staff and students out of certain high-risk foreign areas and told those people to isolate themselves for 14 days upon returning before coming back to campus. And that was written by Tim Dittman, WDWS, 1400 AM. The next piece is from the UI Police Department, Safe Walks Hours Extended, Urbana. Hours for the University of Illinois' Safe Walks service have been temporarily extended in response to three off-campus incidents this week in which students were confronted by men displaying weapons, according to UI Police. Safe Walks provides free walking escorts for students, faculty, and staff members so they don't have to walk alone. This service will be temporarily available earlier than usual, starting at 7 p.m. through Sunday morning, when daylight savings time begins, police said. No students were injured in the recent three incidents, but in two of the incidents, the armed men took students' belongings, according to police. UI police urge walking in groups and maintaining awareness of surroundings. Maintaining awareness of your surroundings is critical, especially when traveling at night, said Interim Police Chief Matthew Myrick. Wearing headphones or looking at your phone diminishes your ability to respond to your surroundings. Walk with purpose and stay attentive. Any student, faculty, or staff member can request a free Safe Walks escort by calling 217-333-1216 or by downloading and using the Safe Walks app for iOS or Android. That was written by Deborah Pressey. The next piece is about Election 2020, Come Meet the Candidates, St. Joseph. The Democratic candidates for Champaign County Judge and Circuit Clerk are holding a meet and greet Monday from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the St. Joseph Township Swearingen Memorial Library, 201 North 3rd Street. The public is invited to enjoy refreshments while asking questions of and talking with judicial candidates Ramona Sullivan, Ruth Wyman, Troy Lozar, and David Moore, each of whom wants their party's nod to run for the circuit judgeship formerly held by the retired Michael Jones. The winner of the primary will face off in November against Sherilyn Sherry Kessler, a Savoy attorney. Also present will be Susan McGrath and Robert Burkhalter, each of whom would like to be the Democratic candidate for Champaign County Circuit Clerk. The winner of that race will challenge Republican Circuit Clerk Katie Blakeman in November. The primary is March 17th, and that was written by Mary Schenk. Next, from the Windsor of Savoy, 5 events for residents. Windsor of Savoy residents will have opportunities to take part in 5 upcoming events focusing on improving their intellectual, emotional, and social wellness. The events will be hosted by students in the University of Illinois' Civic Engagement and Wellness class. Included will be cookie decorating at 3:45 p.m. March 10th, Krannert Art Museum tour at 1 p.m. March 28th, Illini Music Night at 3 p.m. April 2nd, and Illinois Basketball Viewing Party at 3 p.m. April 11th, and a paint and sip event at 3:30 p.m. April 17th. Students in this class are majoring in such fields as kinesiology, community health, finance, and psychology. And that was written by Deborah Pressey. And we'll turn now to the history section. In area history in 1920, the following committee was appointed to be in charge of the Boy Scouts Minstrel Show to be presented that April. C.E. Cox, R.C. Zupke, B.F. Harris, Father Frawley, G.H. Baker, D.W. Stevick, A.T. Burroughs, R.D. Burnham, and E.F. Swigart. Rehearsals were to begin the next week. In 1970, Illinois National Guardsmen were released and the mayors of Champaign and Urbana lifted a curfew after a night of quiet on the University of Illinois campus. The only demonstrations were the kind where students distributed cigarettes, coffee, donuts, and peace buttons to the guardsmen on duty. In 2005, a police issued citations to 60 underage drinkers during the unofficial St. Patrick's Day event in Campus Town. Officers from the Champaign and University of Illinois Police Departments and Illinois State Police conducted a detail focused on underage drinking among students that included checks at 6 Campus Town bars. Citations were issued at all 6. They were Its Brothers, 613 East Green Street, C.O. Daniels, 608 East Daniels Street, White Horse Inn, 112 and a half East Green Street, CAMS, 618 East Green Street, Clybourne, 706 South 6th Street, and Station 211, 211 East Green Street. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, March 6, 2020 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.